Hello and welcome to today's edition of the NES Chit Radio in commemoration of International Literacy Day 2025 with the theme Promoting Literacy in Digital Era. My name is Ogene Kewe, your host for today's conversation, and we'll be having exceptional guests with us on today's edition. Around the world, we reflect on the right to literacy and the evolving nature of how children and adults learn in a digital world. Now than ever, literacy is evolving, and it's no longer just about reading and writing, it's about navigating, interpreting, and engaging with information in a highly digital and interconnected world. Today, we are joined by two individuals deeply embedded in Nigeria's education transformation space. Mr. Godwin, the thematic lead for basic education in the NESG's Education Policy Commission, and Ms. Larry Oniyeton, who is the thematic lead for Out of School Children, NESG's Education Policy Commission. Today, we explore the intersection of foundational literacy and technology and how to ensure no child is left behind in this digital transition. Welcome, Mr. Godwin and Ms. Larry. Thank you for being on this edition with us. So before we start with the questions, I'll just let our guests do a brief introduction of themselves so that we get to know them. Mr. Godwin, a brief introduction, please.
Thank you, Kewe. And it's a pleasure to be here as always. I think like you've already said, my name is Godwin Henry, and I'm the thematic lead of the basic education thematic group at the NESG Education Policy Commission. I think I'll stop at that for now and hand it over to Larry.
Thank you, Ogene Kewe, and thank you to NESG for convening this important conversation. My name is Larewaju Oniyeton, and I am the thematic lead for the Out of School Children thematic group of the NESG Education Policy Commission. And I also work as the executive director of Seed Care and Support Foundation. Thank you for having me.
Thank you once again for being here. So we'll go right into the questions. And my first question is to Mr. Godwin, and we'll start at a foundational question. From your perspective, what are the biggest challenges Nigeria faces in achieving foundational literacy, especially in public basic education?
Thank you, Kewe. Great place to start. And I think when we look at the sector, particularly when we focus on foundational literacy, the challenges, I'll say they are not so much different from the key issues that is affecting the education space generally. These are problems, challenges that we've spoken about in the past, and also we've continued to speak about it. You look at one of the key issues when we look at the quality of teachers, right? Most of the teachers that we have now, they are not able to deliver the quality of education that is needed, and this also affects the quality of foundational literacy. And it's a very dicey issue. I remember the other day the minister was purportedly said to when he was talking about removing unqualified teachers, although I think I listened to the teacher TRC and Teacher Registration Council of Nigeria. I think that's the full meaning when they were trying to clarify that it's not going to be immediate. But again, you look at that. But generally, a major challenge that is being faced is the quality of teachers. So on one hand, we have a quality problem. On another hand, it's also a shortage problem when it comes to the number of teachers that is available to match the number of learners that we have in the classroom. Another major challenge that we would look at is when it comes to the pedagogy, the curriculum. A number of people would say we are using outdated curriculum, which to an extent is true, right? So when you look at the curriculum that we are currently implementing, and then you look at what our foundational literacy gap is, if I add to that, again, this, just to put this out there, this is a personal opinion. I think another issue closely linked to curriculum is also the fact that we have different curriculum that we are implementing in the country. You go to some places where you hear they are using the British curriculum. You go to another place, American curriculum, different curriculum being implemented. Personally, I feel that does not give a way of synergizing where we actually want to head to when it comes to foundational literacy, because all these curriculum have different approaches to how they want to achieve foundational literacy. I'll stop there, but before doing that, another challenge is funding. Foundational literacy is not cheap, right? There's a lot that needs to go in, particularly when it has to do with funding. The materials that are needed, talk of the resources, the text, the production of these texts, how do you go about them? They are not cheap, right? So those for me would be some of the challenges that I would mention, particularly when it comes to public basic education and foundational literacy.
Thank you so much, Godwin, for that picture of where we are. And I'm sure it's critical that we understand the systematic roots of this challenge before we can even think of or innovate our way forward. So thank you for that good start. To Ms. Oneyeton, can we explore how the unique barriers that the children face or that we face currently in learning to read and write? So what unique barriers do we have in learning to read and write, especially from the most vulnerable groups, which are the out-of-school children?
All right. Thank you, Kere. So first, I would like to highlight that literacy is not just about, you know, letters on a page. It's much more. It's about dignity. It's about opportunity. It's about belonging. And in 2025, with the theme of this digital era, it forces us to ask, how do we make sure that, you know, every child, even those outside the classroom, who are out of school, can read, write, and thrive? And so with the out-of-school children, they face different layers of barriers. And the first critical one, which is the most popular, is access. You know, many live in rural or conflict-affected communities where schools are either too far or they're unsafe or they're simply unavailable. So access is that critical first barrier that we would look at. But second is really about poverty. And, you know, when families are struggling to eat, they are struggling to survive, buying books, paying fees are even not an option. So this is one other barrier. And when it comes to literacy, you know, if we drill down to literacy on its own, we see language and cultural barriers come into fore. Children often speak their mother tongue at home, but they are expected to learn literacy in English without support. And, you know, that's a critical challenge. And it's important that, we look at these mother tongue related challenges. And when we talk about the digital era, we can't take out the digital exclusion. In today's world, especially in Nigeria, lack of connectivity is a literacy barrier in itself. These are some of the ones I would like to highlight, but let us put a face to this. So imagine a 10-year-old girl in Borno who has never stepped into a classroom, but every evening she gathers with her siblings around a solar radio to listen to a children's story program. You know, that alone can spark learning and shows us what's possible if we can break down these barriers with creativity and willpower. I mean, this particular girl doesn't have access to school, but she has access to low tech, as simple as a radio, where her and her siblings can get to listen to a radio program where they can learn to read, where they can listen to stories. So I feel that illiteracy is rarely about a child's ability. It's really about our society's failure to give them a fair chance through different means possible. So it's not really about just the child being out of school. It is how are we as a society reaching them where they are.
Thank you so much for that. It's clear that the barriers, like you have said, are not just academic, they are social, they are economic, especially systemic, and we need to find the way forward, just as Godwin had said. So back to Godwin, how do you think digital technology impacted literacy outcomes in Nigeria so far? Would you say it has been positive or negative?
Thank you, Kewe, again. I think in answering that question, I would like to start from where Larry stopped, around the example she gave. Imagine a child in Borno, right, who is unable to, is supposedly out of the formal classroom, but in the evening is, you know, learning through a solar-powered radio. If you look at it from that angle, would see that so far digital technology has contributed positively to impacting literacy outcomes. I remember when the COVID year, I think that was, the COVID year was one of the years where we, according to the standardized exam, we had a very good outcome. I can't remember the percentage now, but again, that's, and we remember that learning that year was basically using digital technologies. So from that lens as well, we can say that yes, there's the positive impact that digital technology is having. We also look at examples of innovations from states at the state level. One of the clear examples that we have is the Edo Best model that is leveraging digital technology in classrooms, and you'll see that has, you know, further improved literacy in the state. There are several other examples, but on the flip side, I would say it's not 100%, right? Because while in some states they've been able to massively leverage the technology, both the high-end and the low-cost technologies. However, in some places, the mere cost of accessing these tools, there's no one that is taking up that particular cost. So in a kind of way, we'll see that learning is a bit hindered in communities like as such. But generally, right, in places where technology has been adopted, the outcome has so far been positive. And there are lots of case studies and a lot of research that has been done to show that technology so far has improved our literacy outcome when we put it side by side with some of the challenges that we have, particularly around the quality of the teachers, the quality of learning taking place in formal classroom. You would see that the impact again has been a positive one.
Thank you. Indeed, it's a double-edged sword, and I really appreciate the example on COVID because it really brought out the positive impact of technology. But like you said, leveraging on what is important tells us how we can make it more positive and reduce negativity. So access and capacity are important as innovation. So thank you very much. To Ms. Oneyeton, can you tell us what ways digital solutions can be leveraged to reach children outside of the formal school system?
Oh, yes. So I mentioned different barriers, and I don't want us to be to be scared that, oh, there's so many barriers. Digital solutions can actually help to leapfrog barriers if we design them with inclusion in mind. That being said, for children out of school, we need to look at digital solutions like mobile phones. I mean, that's really one of the low-hanging fruits. Mobile phones can become libraries in the palm of a parent or a community volunteer. Like I mentioned earlier in the example of the girl in Borno, solar-powered devices and radios can deliver lessons where there's no electricity. You know, these are some of the solutions we can design around our challenges and the barriers that exist in our country. More recently, we're talking about AI chatbots that, you know, can help guide young people and children towards tailored learning, even when teachers are scarce, like what Henry talked about. We know AI is not to replace teachers, but, you know, where we do not even have teachers, AI chatbots are serving and providing, you know, solutions where teachers are really scarce. But let me be clear, you know, connectivity is not luxury anymore. It's not about, you know, this is for the rich people. It's the new chalk and blackboard. If we want digital to work, you know, access and affordability must be guaranteed. And so if we see connectivity as the new blackboard or whiteboard and marker or chalk and blackboard, then we would realize how important this is, because the era we're in this digital era, we cannot take connectivity for granted. So these are some of the digital solutions that we can leverage. But we must note that a tablet in the hands of one child who is privileged and silence in another hand of another child is actually not progress. So until we look at inclusion for all children and ensuring that no child is left behind, we're still not making progress. Thank you.
Thank you. Connectivity is not luxury anymore. I think that's an inspiring way to look at technology. And you had mentioned it not just a classroom tool, but as an outreach tool and also to improve our teachers. So I'm thinking, or I'm just looking at it as a way to do more to promote a formal school system. So thank you very much. So Godwin, what role can digital tools like e-learning platforms, digital storybooks, and AI-based tutors play in closing literacy gaps? I know we're looking at it and in a maybe ambitious way, but these things are very important to promote digital era. So how do you think they play roles in closing digital gap or literacy gap?
Thank you, Kewe. when you were asking the question, I was smiling. Personally, I think Lanreat, you know, was already speaking to that. Like she rightly said, it's no longer a luxury, right? And I think it's even considered a fundamental right, right? So when we look at digital literacy, and we begin to look at the possibility that digital tools, you know, open us up to. If we look at, you know, like you asked, what role can they play in closing literacy gap? You know, when we started this conversation, we were, you know, speaking around the problems. So one of the key issue, like we rightly said, is the availability of teachers, right? With digital tools, it makes up for some of the gaps that we are currently facing. So you look at closing the gap in the availability of qualified teachers, right? When we also look at e-learning platform, you look at the number in terms of quantity of resources that it gives access to learners, right? So you don't need to be storing a million hard copy text in your home, or buying a million hard copy books with one e-learning platform. You can have this tool, these materials on the platform, and anyone can access them, you know, at any point in time, just from one portal. So those are some of the things. Even when it comes to language, like Larry was talking about, one of the issues that we've always had with literacy is code switching, L1, L2. With digital platforms that are being developed, you can easily have that gap again closed, where a child is able to learn in their mother tongue. I think I came across a platform some months back that allows children to code in one of the native languages. I think it's Yoruba. So imagine such platform and what it's doing when it comes to literacy in the country. So those are some of the roles that, you know, we see it playing. However, I think I'm beginning to sound like someone who is always adding a caveat. The pushback we've had, which we've said initially, is that these platforms and developing these technologies are not cheap, right? This might look like it's expensive investment at the onset, but when we look at over time, you know, this investment, you are able to balance it out, and it's not like you repeatedly need heavy capital to be able to implement some of these solutions. So what you have is that over time, you are going to have an averagely lower cost compared to what we currently have when it comes to recruiting personnel or buying resources and sending these resources, when it comes to reaching hard to access areas. These are some of the places that we see that once digital tools are being, you know, deployed in those places, definitely it's then accelerates access to digital literacy for young learners.
Thank you. The start is always not cheap, but then over time it becomes an investment that you are happy you made. So these are powerful tools, especially when integrated intentionally into the curriculum and classroom. Starting out may seem expensive, but investment is a long-term assurance of growth. So thank you very much. To Ms. Oneyeton, are there community-based or informal learning initiatives that have successfully integrated digital tools to promote literacy, like actual examples that you can just help us with?
Yes, absolutely. And I must say that these initiatives have given us hope. Personally, the ones we have tested with my work at SEED is NABU. NABU distributes digital storybooks in local languages through a free mobile app, and they even provide physical copies for the last mile to children in underserved communities. And, you know, personally, we've worked with them to take these books to children. And, you know, these books are both in mother tongue in Nigeria. They are in different countries, but in Nigeria, they currently have books in Yoruba, Hausa, and Igbo. And, you know, this moves from, you know, English to the mother tongue, and it's being a really great resource at the community level. We also have community hubs like iRead Mobile Library, the Mobile Reading Room. iRead Mobile Library operates in Lagos. The Mobile Reading Room operates in Abuja and other parts of Northern Nigeria, I believe. And they're using e-readers and offline mobile libraries to promote literacy. And, you know, I've seen the magic that these mobile libraries create for the communities that they serve. What is common with these initiatives is that they meet children where they are, in their homes, in the community squares, at IDP camps, not where they wish they were, but where they currently are. And so I believe that the future of literacy is hybrid, you know, high tech when possible, but low tech when necessary, because, you know, we need to be always child-centered and we need to meet the children where they are. And so I believe these examples are really just showing us that, you know, we can go high tech with the likes of NABU and we can go low tech with the likes of the community hubs like the mobile libraries I mentioned. So yeah, I am always hopeful when I see these solutions that we can really promote literacy for our children.
Thank you. Hybrid literacy, low tech and high tech when possible. And it's happy to hear that we have these innovations that encourage promoting literacy even outside the formal structures, and I really hope that we tap into them and improve them as much as we can. So Mr. Godwin, are there successful models or initiatives within Nigeria that use digital tools to promote literacy among school-aged children? So I think we've come from a part of just promoting literacy, maybe outside the formal structures. What of those within the formal structures or among the school-age children, probably basic education?
Thank you, Kewe, for that. Examples of models. I think one of the models, the first one that I'm going to mention is the Nigeria Learning Passport Program, which is a joint initiative by UNICEF Nigeria and the Federal Ministry of Education. I think for me, that is like, that program, you know, is a great example of a digital solution that is improving literacy. That is one. I know most people, most listeners would likely be familiar with edtech platforms like ULesson and what they are trying to do. I think there's also Gradly as well. I think those are also examples of you know, initiatives from Nigeria that are using digital tools to promote literacy. I'd earlier mentioned what EduBest is doing, and I think the Echo Excel program also has a similar program. They started it during the COVID year where TAPS was given to secondary school children to help, you know, augment for their learning. One program as well that I've seen that I really like is one by, I think it's called Fast Track by Aid Area I. I can't remember their full name, but it's an organization called Area I. They've been able to, you know, launch something that is really leveraging digital tools to promote literacy. And I think the final example I can recall right now is there's this organization that distributes learning tablets called Success Tabs. So these are just some of the initiatives that I've seen that are heavily leveraging digital tools to promote literacy, not just for children who are not in school, but also for children who are within our formal learning environment. Because, you know, like we mentioned when we started, we have a good number of children who are in school but are not, you know, getting the required skills. So these initiatives are, if you look into what they've been able to do so far, they've been able to show that they can move the needle a bit forward.
Thank you. These are examples, gives us a lot of hope, especially as we think about scale and implication and how you've said we can move it forward. So finally, I'm just going to ask us for our last thoughts, but also with this question. How can government, private sector, and civil society collaborate to improve digital literacy, both for out-of-school children? And also, what policy or investment changes would you recommend to scale digital literacy? So, to Ms. Onyeton first, government, private sector collaboration and policy or investment changes for improving digital literacy. Yes.
Yeah, thank you so much. So very quickly, we must shift from working in silos to really building bridges. Government can create enabling policies and infrastructure, and the private sector can bring innovation, scale, financing models. Civil society can contribute deep community trust and last mile reach. We need to look at practical models like public-private community partnerships, where, for instance, government provides digital learning platforms, telcos ensure affordable data, NGOs train facilitators, and run safe community learning hubs. Together, we can create an ecosystem, really, where no child is left behind. Literacy is actually too big for any single sector. It takes an ecosystem to raise a reader. And so when we're looking at these urgent shifts, on the policy side, we must formally recognize non-formal and community learning centers as part of the education ecosystem. We need to continue to encourage local language inclusion in digital tools, embed digital literacy in our foundational learning strategy as a country. And on the investment side, which is really, really critical, we need to look at how we move away from only short-term donor projects towards sustainable financing. Yes, pilots are important when we start work, but we must also design solutions. We must also ensure that we invest in teachers and facilitators and not just the edtech devices. Technology alone would not teach our children. We need to invest in the teachers, and policy creates an enabling environment, but investment ensures that the last child in the most remote location is not left behind. So like I mentioned, we need to move from pilots to, doing policies that scale what works, so that that girl in Borno State or a boy in Ajegunle or the nomadic child in Kastina has the same chance to become literate, and their birthplace should not determine their ability to read. We need to ensure equity in literacy. And if literacy is dignity, then digital literacy is the dignity of this generation. And Nigeria can really not afford to leave millions of children behind. I would like to say and, conclude that I know that our challenge in Nigeria is not lack of innovation. It's our courage to scale, to include and sustain what we're doing. So we need to move from hope to action. And I believe that when we do that, we'll be able to promote literacy in this digital era. Thank you.
Thank you. We need to move from hope to action. I really like that. So, Mr. Godwin, your final thoughts, and how do you think the government, private sector, and civil society can collaborate to improve digital literacy? And what policy or investment changes would you recommend to scale digital literacy?
As Larry was speaking, I was saying I wish Kewe had called me first, because it's definitely difficult to top what she has shared so far, because they are really practical, and she just hits all the nails, not just on the head but at the right spot. Not to repeat what she has said, I think for me, if we even look at where to start from, I remember some not quite long, right, there was this conversation about Nigeria's National Digital Learning Policy that was a joint project by the Ministry of Education and several other ministries, right, which, was the intention was to ensure that we leverage the digital era, right, and we are able to have the right form of digital literacy and data analysis program, not just one of projects. But if we ask ourselves, just like many other policies, right? Where are we with that? To what extent has the provisions of that policy been implemented? For me, something I've always said is that as a sector and as a nation, we need to move away from, you know, having reforms that are being driven by just strong reformers and individuals. We need, just like Larry has said, a whole systemic buy-in, systemic shift, the entire ecosystem to be involved. So when we look at what needs to be done, for me, I'll say plus one to everything that it is that Larry had previously shared. And we also need to believe that we can actually achieve it, because I think sometimes that belief is not there, which is why people are not also as invested as they should be. So digital literacy, digital tools in this era, like we've re-echoed all through this conversation, is not optional, is not an add-on, it's an essential. It is the new air, the new oxygen that we are breathing in this particular century. So we need to take it seriously, and we need to invest heavily in it. So I'd like to stop there, because we've already shared a lot on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Godwin. Thank you, Ms. Oneyeton. Those are clear call to actions, and we hope our stakeholders are listening to these points that are actionable, like you said, if we believe we can actually achieve them. So thank you very much. And we will be closing. So thank you so much once again, Mr. Henry and Ms. Oneyeton, for these rich and timely conversations. We have spoken about the challenges, the barriers, the positives, the negatives, the things that we can innovate on, and the proposed solutions for our improvements on digital literacy. Promoting literacy in the digital era requires more than technology. Like we have said, it demands belief, faith, vision, collaboration, and a relentless focus on inclusion. We hope today's discussion sparks ideas, dialogue, and action among policymakers, educators, and private sector actors. Thank you to our resource persons, our guests, and we really appreciate your time today. And to our listeners, thank you for tuning in. Until next time, let's keep pushing for Nigeria, where every child, regardless of your location or status, can read, learn, and thrive. Do enjoy your day. Thank you very much.